from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom?
Feel
like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever, and the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Welcome to another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast. Another really good guest, former Sixers head coach Larry Brown. We talk about everything, and I'll address some of the things that that he discusses. Address it when it's over, and I agree with most of the things. I don't agree with everything, but in sports right now, I know we all want the games back. We have a lot of important issues in this country. The pandemic is still real. We still got to take it seriously. We still have to socially distance. We should all still wear our masks. However, the problems with social injustice still exist in this country, and it's great to see more and more people are making an effort to make things better so we can all be one. I don't know how long it's going to take, be one in this country, but social injustice obviously has been a real issue. But the other thing that, I want to talk about, the NBA coming back, and Larry Brown talks about it. I think it's going to be a mediocre product. And again, it's great that we're going to have games. I think to include 8 games, I think, is a joke. It's just a money grab by the owners to try to get to their 70 games for the season so they get their full TV money. It's an opportunity for the NBA because they want to get Zion Williamson into the playoffs, but they want him to play some games. The whole thing is, I just think it's, just go right to the playoffs. I mean, hockey's going right to the playoffs. Just go right to the playoffs. And the baseball players, at the point that I've put this podcast up, have still not agreed to anything. And the owners can implement that 48-game schedule, because that was part of the deal they made earlier this season. They said they didn't want to take a pay cut. Well, they really have not taken a pay cut because the money is just prorated to the games they play. They've created their own problem. And it's Scott Boras. I don't know how many times I got to tell you. This guy just leads these players right down the path of ruin because it's all about him. It's not about his players. This is what it is. It's a different situation now. It's a very difficult situation. I don't even care if baseball comes back. I don't. And when it comes back, it won't be as good a product. I get it. And I understand it. And none of the sports are going to be as good a good product. And that includes hockey with the way they're coming back. But they're playing games. I don't like what seems to be when basketball comes back, if somebody catches the COVID-19 virus, they'll quarantine them for 7 days. Well, weren't we told like 12 to 14 days? Didn't they stop things before when this all happened? This is a problem. And how many other players have they infected? I don't care if they test them every day. If you get it, sometimes the tests don't show positive for at least a few days. And Adam Silver at one point said, unless there's tests available for everyone in this country, we shouldn't come back. Well, they're going to test these players every day, as they are in every other sport. Are there enough tests for everybody? There's still an issue. I understand they're playing, but they got to have, I think, better guidelines for this thing to happen. All right, Larry Brown, fascinating guy, talks about Allen Iverson, what happened in his exit meeting before Allen Iverson had that famous pregame or that famous news conference where he was talking about practice, what happened with all that. And then I'll address some of the things that Larry Brown said once you hear the complete conversation that I had with Larry Brown. Here he is, the former head coach of the 76ers. And welcoming former 76ers head coach Larry Brown, former coach of a lot of teams, Larry, but he's also the only coach in the history of basketball that has won an NCAA championship. He did that with Kansas, and an NBA championship, and he did that with the Detroit Pistons. Larry Brown, Larry, it's an interesting time right now, and the most important thing is, how are you doing?
I'm good. I was kind of stuck in North Carolina for a while. I was visiting my grandkids and, you know, couldn't get to New York. My two children were, you know, in the city when the pandemic struck, so they came out to Long Island, did their courses online, and I finally got here last week, which has been great. They're keeping me on lockdown, Howard.
Where is here?
We're out in the Hamptons.
Oh,
East
okay.
Hampton, actually. When I was coaching Philly, we had a place in California, and I used to have to come back a lot, you know, and take the red eye. I'm not a good flyer, so we decided to try to find a place closer to Philly. And decided to come to Long Island, where I grew up.
It's a very nice place. All right, the NBA is coming back. I'm not sure if I like 22 teams involved in the comeback, just to include teams that weren't in the playoff situation. And really, it seems more to include Zion Williamson. Do you like what they're doing in the way that they're going to come back?
No, the schedule's imbalanced, Howard, to start with. So you don't know whether you're going to have a good schedule early or a favorable schedule late. So you can't really tell. And every game, to me, matters. Especially since years ago, they split it up where you play two games against the West if you're in the East, and you know, maybe four or five or even three games if, you know, it's a conference rival. So I don't think you get a true indication of, you know, how good the teams are. And, you know, some teams get better late. So I don't get it. I also don't, you know, like the idea that they're starting July 31st. And they're going to play in one location. I'm worried about, you know, these players and, you know, the possibility of them getting hurt. Because, you know, a lot of people don't have access to gyms. I remember when I was a young player, I would work out like crazy in the summertime to get ready for the season. And the first 2 days of practice, I felt like I didn't work out one day. You saw where Michael, you know, came back. I was coaching Indiana. His first came back with the Bulls. He went 6-for-27. He wasn't in the kind of shape that, you know, we were accustomed to watching him play.
So basically, I heard Jeff Van Gundy say that this is not going to be good basketball when they come back. It sounds like you agree with that. Either the players are not going to be in shape or it's just not going to be good basketball.
I don't see how it can be. You know, it takes time this is usually the time you're playing your best basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, most coaches figure out, you know, who they're going to play. Guys have been, I don't understand this resting deal that, you know, people are doing now. Can you imagine me telling Allen he had to take a day off?
Load management is a joke. It's a joke.
Yeah, I don't understand it. You know, I'm really all in favor of the safety of the player, but you know, this player management to me is really difficult to understand. But I agree with Jeff. You're going to have limited days of practice. You're going to have limited days to get yourself ready to get into the playoffs. And then when everybody's supposed to be playing the best and the best teams are really actually in it, we're not going to see that. And I don't know how players are going to respond, quite honestly. What if one guy on your team gets the virus and it happens to be LeBron or Anthony Davis, you know, one of your better players? What's going to happen then? Are you going to be the same team? You know, I remember when I was in Philly and we made the finals, you know, George Lynch broke his ankle. Eric Snow was playing with a stress fracture. Matt Geiger had a bad knee, didn't play. We weren't the same team. Not that we would have beaten the Lakers, but we certainly weren't the same team. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic for me.
Larry, I know you were a big fan of Joel Embiid. Obviously, coming from Kansas, you had a background of him. But it just seems like he's almost never in shape. Now, with the situation the way it is now, and probably playing every other day, how do you think he's going to be able to play in the situation the way it is now?
Well, we have to hope that, you know, Philly's been in touch with these guys. I'm sure the NBA's kept Brett, you know, aware of what their hopes were in terms of starting the season. You know, I'm on a podcast or on with coaches almost every day, college coaches, and a lot of pro coaches call me about the draft and stuff like that. Most of the college coaches that I'm close to are keeping in touch with their kids and telling them, you know, things that they need to do, or, you know, both academically to finish their online courses and then to be ready to be in shape, because a lot of the conferences allowing kids to come back in June and start working out without coaches around. So I would hope that all the NBA people, I'm pretty confident, are in touch with their players and telling them the importance of being ready. Not exactly knowing the dates, but everybody's been remarking to me forever that Philly has to get Joel in better shape and that Ben Simmons and Joel can't play together. Howard, they're two of the best players in the league. And I hope that maybe this pandemic will make them realize how lucky we are to have the opportunity to play and how important it is to be ready when the time comes, because, you know, they could win a championship. It certainly happened to teams, you know, left gifted that. So hopefully he'll be ready.
Well, here's another thing that I see, and it's, I know things change over years. They always change. But it's obvious that the players run the league, and the players, in many cases, don't listen to the coaches. And the example that I'll give you, Brett Brown asked Ben Simmons in December to say, hey, listen, I don't care if you make it. Just shoot 1-3 a game. And I think he shot one. He shot one in months, and he decided that because there's no discipline. There doesn't seem to be any repercussions. If he did that, if you asked him to do that, and you ran a play, and I asked Brett this, and he didn't respond, he didn't answer the question, and you ran a play for Ben Simmons, he didn't shoot the three. You ran it again, he was wide open again, and didn't shoot the three. What would you do as the head coach?
Well, it's hard for me to, you know, tell how it's being done now and how I did it. You know, every day with Allen was a challenge. But every day he stepped out on the court, he's trying to win the game. But I've always, you know, I grew up where if a coach told you to do something, you did it. And if you were fair and honest, and he didn't do it, there was a consequence. But it's what I used to tell all my players, you know, when you do things that are good and right for your team and the organization, you put all that stuff in a savings account. And then if you screw up and maybe have a disagreement and you realize, hey, this guy's trying to do everything he possibly can to help your team and help his teammates, and he screws up, makes an, you know, you have a disagreement or something, you take that stuff that he's put in the savings account and you say, hey, let's deal with it. But my thing, Howard, I look at Ben Simmons, I don't think he needs to shoot a three. I think it's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard in my life, you know, worrying about whether this kid can shoot a three-pointer or not. He's one of the best players in the NBA. He can guard. He rebounds the ball. He's a ball mover. But it's how you start is how you finish. And when you get these young kids to play on your team, one, you got to have good people around them. And I thought when they lost Butler and J.J. and McConnell, I think I got his name right.
Yeah,
the little point guard.
Yep.
You're losing three unbelievable great teammates that are great role models. So I'm sure if Jimmy Butler or J.J. or one of those kids heard Brett say, hey, shoot the three, they would have the backing, and Ben Simmons would shoot the three. I watched Ben since he was a sophomore. I used to go to Mont Verde when I was at SMU recruiting. And there's a good kid who can really play. And it's kind of confusing to me what's going on. I'll tell you another thing. If the coach, the GM, and the president, and the owner are all not connected at the hip, you can't have anything, you know, working.
And if you look at every great,
if you look at every great franchise, there's always one voice. You might have disagreements, but at the end of the day, there's one voice. When I was in Philly, you know, Mr. Snyder let me hire Billy King. Billy King and I had I don't know how many disagreements. Mr. Snyder had different ideas about certain things. But at the end of the day, and Pat Croce had his own ideas about different things. But at the end of the day, you know, we were all on the same page and the players got the same message. But you said it earlier, the league has changed. Players are running the league. And that to me is, not a healthy thing. I think they deserve what they get. You know, the people come to see the great players play, But at the end of the day, basketball, when it's played the right way, is the greatest team game ever. And you can't have special rules for different players. And if you do, which I probably was guilty of with Allen, you got to surround Allen with the guys that understand, you know, how unique he is, and that we have to kind of make some concessions to the things that he does, but knowing that every time he steps out on the court, he's going to give you everything he can to help you win the game, no matter what it is. He's going to play hurt. He's going to compete at the highest level. And if you ask him to play 48 minutes, he's going to play 48 minutes to the best he can. But you know, these young players, they don't all have these role models anymore, Howard.
Yeah, and that's why Utah was successful back in the day. That's why San Antonio was successful for many, many years. But, Larry, and you just touched on it, and at your Hall of Fame induction, and you made this comment before, basketball is the greatest team sport if played the right way. What's wrong with the game the way they play it today?
I don't want people to think that I'm bitter at all, but we're bringing kids in too young. You know, now during this pandemic, we're watching all these old teams play. You see the Lakers play Boston. You see Detroit play Chicago. Do you see any young players on the court? You don't see any. It took Michael 7 years, you know, to win a championship. He stayed 3 years at Carolina. Kareem went 4 years to college. Larry Bird, I think, went 5. We're getting all these young kids and expecting them to be great and play immediately. And if they don't play immediately, somebody's complaining about it. And a lot of people that, you know, aren't so secure are allowing these kids to get away with being upset. And they don't have somebody sitting in their locker room telling them, hey, your turn will come. You just have to understand that it's got to be about winning and about you doing things to help everybody on our team better. When I say play the right way, every day when I played for Coach Smith, we wrote on the board, play hard, play smart, play together, have fun. And then when I became a coach, I asked him, I said, would you mind, Coach, if I wrote, it'd be nice if we defended and rebounded? And he said, absolutely. And that, to me, is the right way to play. And then the other thing is you're held accountable if you don't do the things that you're asked to do night in and night out. Look at the players that played with Allen. You know, a lot of people wouldn't even consider these guys as really great players. Yet they made us great because they allowed Allen to do the things he was capable of doing. And the last thing about playing the right way, I go everywhere watching people practice. People ask me to come and critique their team, and I'm the one that always learns. But we're not doing any basketball-specific drills anymore. We just got all these workout and developmental coaches, and they're not doing basketball-specific drills. You know, to teach him how to make an extra pass, to set a screen, to make a hard cut, to run on the break even though they might not get it, but their teammate might get it because of their effort, or how to get back on defense or to block out or to take a great shot, or not be upset if Reggie Miller or Barkley take 30 shots and I only take 3. Knowing that a coach has enough confidence in you to play you, even though you might not be, in your mind, doing things that you think you're capable of doing.
So, Larry, there's the anniversary, if you call it an anniversary, it was a short time ago, it was in May, and I sent Allen Iverson a text message. I said, it was the greatest news conference. I laughed my rear end off that I've ever seen. I was laughing so hard. The practice news conference. But what... It's practice? We talking practice? You know, what... And you talked to him before he came out there. What went on in that discussion with, I guess it was you and Billy King, in that discussion with Allen Iverson, Was he fired up in that meeting with you at the end of the season?
Well, I'm kind of confused about when Billy and I and Alan met. But I know I met with Alan privately 3 hours before the press conference. I think it started at 6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he missed our, they call it an exit meeting, you know,
right,
when the season ends out. Mm-hmm. And you sit down individually and you talk about what we need to do better. You know, coach, what I needed to do better and what you expect from the player. Alan was late, didn't show up to the meeting. So I had a 3 o'clock meeting with Alan, and all he wanted to talk to me about was, am I going to be traded? Are you guys going to keep me? And we spent 20 minutes going back and forth. He was with a friend, and I said, Alan, there's no way we're going to trade you. You know, you're going to be here next year, I promise you. But to be honest with you, you know, I told the press at that exit meeting, you know, that I needed Alan to be a little bit more responsible. And that went on for every year, every day I ever coached him. But all he wanted from me was the assurance he wasn't going to be traded. And when he went to the meeting, he was away from me for 3 hours. So God knows what he was doing those 3 hours. You know, the season was over. I'm pretty sure he was by where we practiced, you know, maybe at TGF Fridays or one of his hangouts. And when he went into the meeting, the only thing on Allen Iverson's mind was, Coach and I talked about I'm staying. And then the first question was, you know, Larry had said at the exit meeting that Alan had to be more responsible and you know, he had to be on time for practice. And that's when he heard that, that's when he went off. And I get a call, I get 25 calls from newspaper people and reporters and journalists on the anniversary of that date every year to try to explain what happened.
Well, the thing is, but you did get frustrated with Alan because of his lack of desire to practice. And it never seemed to change. How frustrating was that?
My biggest frustration with Alan was, one, I thought he could have been, well, he's still one of the greatest players to ever play. But I thought he could have been as good as anybody that's ever played. And he would have been a great role model for so many young kids that admired him. And I used to get frustrated with him because I told him, you don't realize the impact you have on kids that just worship you. So if you would just do the right thing every single day, you're going to have a positive impact on people that you really care about. And then I said, at the end of the day, you're going to even be better than you really are right now, and you'll probably last long. And if you remember when Kobe passed away,
mm-hmm.
Alan came up with an unbelievable comment. Alan said, when Kobe was going out to work out at 6 a.m. in the morning, so many days Alan was coming in from being out of the club. And you look at Kobe, what he played, 20 years, Howard?
Mm-hmm.
And Alan played, I don't know, maybe 12. And we know he didn't play the 12 years at the level we know he would have been capable of playing if he would have just taken care of himself a little bit more and understood the responsibility he had. And the last thing, I grew up with, I think I have the greatest background ever because of the people I played for. You know, my high school coach was great. I played for Dean Smith, Frank McGuire, Alex Hannum, Coach Newell, Mr. Iba, John McClendon. I had great coaches sit next to me, and I coached the very best players. And every one of those coaches, their whole deal was you treat 1 through 15 the same. Now, you might have favorites, but you try to treat them all the same. You try to develop their trust, and you make them understand the preparation you do every single day in practice is going to be what's going to enable you to be good and be successful and play up to your potential. So to not have your best player there, you know, every day was difficult for me. And I could never get Alan to understand. I realize you're playing more minutes than anybody. I hope as a coach I would be sensitive to you to not wear you out in practice. But I couldn't be sensitive to the guys that weren't playing, because I always feared that if we didn't really practice them hard and prepare them when you have to use them because of an injury or foul trouble or something, that they never could perform up their ability. So practice meant a lot to me. And now it's unbelievable. I used to bring Alan to talk to my teams, and the kids were mesmerized by him. And he was totally honest with all of them. He told them the good things he did, the bad things he did, the things he would have changed. And I said to Alan after every time we meet, I said, Alan, you ought to go all over every NBA team and every college team and just talk to them about the things you're telling my kids, because it would be the most impactful thing they could ever hear.
You know, it's a shame that players realize it after it's over. And it's too bad if Alan had ever realized it while he was playing. He could have probably played two or three more good years. He was kind of not even the same at the end, you know, bouncing around the way he did.
Well, I think leaving Philly killed him, because he was Philly. And then I didn't do my job. No matter how Alan would think or how Alan would act, it was my responsibility. You know, Mr. Snyder let me run the team. He never interfered with anything. He was always there as an advocate of what we were doing, but he was also there to help us if there were things that were difficult. Having Pat Croce with me, Howard, you know, he was great for our franchise, because all the things he loved to do in public, you know, exciting people, being so positive, were things that were difficult for me. But at the end of the day, when you have the responsibility to coach a great player like Alan, it's your job to make him do all the right things. I tried my very best. I became a better coach. I became a better person because of him. And I'm closer to him today now than I ever could have imagined. And when I look back on the time I had with him, and I watch old films, you know, I get ticked off at myself, because I didn't realize how truly great he was. I thought he was great. But after watching now and watching the films and watching how physical people got with him, and how referees really, quite honestly, didn't like the kid, if he'd have been playing today, he'd average 50 a game, Howard, the way they call the game now.
Oh, yeah, there's no defense either. I mean, it's guys get right to the basket. Guys get open shots all the time. It really is kind of amazing. Larry, your days in Philly, what do you remember most? You've coached a lot of teams and been a lot of places. That's part of your career. But if Philadelphia seems to still have that big place in your heart, what do you remember about coaching in Philadelphia with the Sixers?
Well, you know, everybody always asks me my favorite teams, and you know, I can never say that. But if you talk about a team that overachieved, I think the Philly teams probably did that as well as any I've ever been associated with. I love the passion of the fans, not only for basketball, but you know, because of Mr. Snyder, I was a big hockey fan. I loved Andy Reid. I used to love the Eagles. You know, I loved Frank Kona and Boa, and I used to go to the Phillies. I don't think there's anywhere in the country that loves sports more than the people in Philly. But the thing that really was special for me is it's a basketball culture. You know, that community has – used to have unbelievable high school basketball. I had the, you know, the Big Five is really unique. The coaches in the Big Five when I was there embraced me and allowed me to be part of their family. So I think the thing that I look back on most is the passion they have for sports. And I can't tell you, Alan, how many times I'm walking through an airport and somebody will stop me and they don't know who the hell what my name is, but they'll say, "You coached Allen Iverson, you coached the Sixers." And that makes me smile.
Yeah, there were some really good days, and obviously you weren't going to beat the Lakers, but people got pumped up when you won that first game. And the fact that you even got there in that season is one of the truly amazing jobs for any team to get there and play in the NBA Finals. And you had Allen Iverson and four defensive players.
let me tell you, I get this every day. People forget. I told you George had broken his ankle, and George was a key when you play the Lakers because nobody could stop Kobe. But when you have Eric and George Lynch and Aaron McKee, you have three guys that can make it tough for him. And George didn't play. And then Geiger wouldn't play. You know, Geiger said his knee was hurting. So he only played really game one and played great. But you needed 18 fouls to play against Shaq. And at the time, we would have had Geiger, Todd McCullough, who was a rookie, and Mutombo. So there you have 18 fouls. But we had Rodney Brewster on the team. We had Jermaine Jones, who started when George got hurt. We had Kevin Ollie. You know, we had Roger Bell that we picked up from the YMCA just before the April deadline. And they were playing in the finals against an NBA championship team that you could arguably say is one of the greatest that ever played. And if we'd have made fouls in game two, we might have won game two. Now, I don't know if we would have been good enough to beat them if everybody was healthy. But I think we would have gave him even a better fight. And then I think that my experience with Philly helped us win when we were in Detroit. Because, you know, I told the guys that, you know, if you defend and you do the right thing, you have a chance to beat a great team. And the Philly team defended every single night. And the Detroit team did exactly the same thing.
Well, it was there was some really good times. And Larry, I hope you're doing well. The most important thing in today's world, and there's a couple of major issues going on, obviously, is stay safe, stay healthy. And that goes for everything that's going on. And that's really important in today's world. So hopefully you do that.
What's that? Amazing what you just said. You know, I see what's going on in the world, and I always wish that, you know, we would act like a sports team, because the only thing matters when you play for a team is, are you a good guy, a decent person, do you love your teammates, and can you play? And if we would take that little analogy about the way we conduct our lives, I think we'd have a heck of a lot less problems.
Yeah, well said. Larry, it's always fun talking to you. It's always interesting. It's not just fun, it's interesting, because I love the perspective you have on so many things. Take care. We'll talk. And again, most importantly, you and your family, stay safe and hit the golf ball straight. That's the most.
It's always great hearing from you, Howard. Thanks so much.
All right, Larry, take care and have a great day. And I'll talk to you again very, very soon. Take care. Thank you.
Hopefully. Bye.
Well, Larry said a lot of things. I don't agree that this team, certainly, can they win a championship? Yeah, they can win a championship. I don't think they will.
I don't think all of a sudden things change when you've had that much time off. Had a little bit of criticism of Brett Brown, but I do agree with him. The fact that they miss Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick, and T.J. McConnell. There was an energy. There was something created, and they were a fit. Right now, they're not really a fit. Al Horford can't play forward, and he is such a good guy, and he's a good player. But he's a backup center, and that's what he should be. And there's no way that, from what Brett Brown said, that Embiid's going to average 38 minutes a game in the playoffs. But they do miss Butler, J.J., and T.J. McConnell. There's in the conversation about Allen Iverson, he admits there's some things he should have done differently. But in practice, certainly was one of them. It was just different. But it was a great line when he said, when Kobe was going out to practice, Allen Iverson was coming in from the club. And he had some great memories of his times here in Philadelphia. And I never realized, I forgot, I did realize at the time, look at the players. He got to the finals with Jermaine Jones, Rajah Bell, who he said came from the YMCA, and some of those other players. It's amazing the few players that he had, and he got to the finals. And they shot so poorly from the foul line in the second game. I don't know if they would have beaten the Lakers, but darn, if they shot 57% in that second game. But it was fun. It's really fun listening to Larry Brown. I don't agree that Ben Simmons should not take a three. Whether it's a three, whether it's a jump shot, Ben Simmons has got to. He's got to just create some kind of, he's got to create some kind of threat from the outside. At least don't show us how to socially distance on defense when these players are at least 6 feet away from you because they know you won't take a shot. He's got to take a shot. He's got to do it. So I disagree with Larry Brown about that. He's got to do something. As good as he may be, he's not good enough unless, and he's got to listen to the coach. And as he said, there would be consequences if he didn't listen to the coach. But that's the unfortunate part of Brett Brown. He's a great guy, probably a good enough coach. He'd be a better coach if there was some kind of discipline there. But we'll see again. As the time that I posted this, baseball had not come back. And I don't really care. All this bickering about money is making me sick. It really makes me sick, and they're the only sport that complains about it. But anyway, I appreciate it. We'll be back with another conversation with a great guest very soon. But I appreciate everybody being here for the Howard Eskin podcast. Stay safe. Always stay healthy. Do the right things. And if we do the right things in our world, this world and our country will get better. At least I hope. It might take some time. And don't take this pandemic for granted. Oh, one other point. Jerry Jones, why does he always get what he wants? There's no question in my mind that he asked the governor of Texas, Governor Greg Abbott, to allow went from 25% to 50% capacity in a stadium in less than a week. And I know he's in some way, I'm just guessing now, that he's a campaign contributor to the governor, and he opens it up for 50%. That's an unfair advantage, and Roger Goodell's got to stop it. If there's teams without people in the stands during games, it's not fair if the Cowboys and, yes, the Texans, but it's really about Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. I think that's a disgrace if the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, lets that happen. All right, everybody, again, stay safe, really stay safe, and think about what you're doing when you do it all the time. And thanks for joining us on the Howard Eskin podcast.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.